come out from beneath your nose. And just as you smile, think once in a while, good things do last.
So we've come to the end of the show here at Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show. I only got to two Canadian tracks today. My apologies, but I got wrapped up in playing that older stuff at the start of the show. But not to worry, we have plenty of shows ahead. So that was the Albertans with the final, well, it's the second to final track, track 9 off their New Age album. And Expo 86 is the album by Wolf Parade, and I played you a track from that album as well, called Two Men in New Tuxedos. A couple of Canadian tracks there. That's the end of the show. This has been Stranded, the Australian Canadian music show. Marie is next with Synchronicity. And I'm just going to fade out for you now. This is awesome. I found this Bush sound CD. This is just Australian bush music, like you hear birds chirping. And so just put yourself, think about sitting in, on a chair out in the bush somewhere and being very calm and at peace with the world, and this will welcome you into Monday until Marie arrives. Okay, bye.
Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon to start your week feeling uplifted and optimistic. Let's tap into the universal energy that connects us all. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good afternoon. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And wherever you are listening from, thank you so much for joining us today. We have a very special guest, Lynn McTaggart, and she is coming to Vancouver on April 29th to the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel, which is in Richmond near the airport. April 29th. And if you want to get on the air today and speak with Lynn and ask her a question, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Now, Lynn McTaggart is the author of the new book, The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. She's also a journalist and a speaker and an author, world-renowned. So it's such a pleasure to have her on the show today. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for calling. Are you in Europe today?
I am in the UK, yeah,
wow.
Where I live.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Your connection is amazing, considering the distance, so thank you for calling
in. I know.
In.
I mean, the miracle of modern science. Huh?
Yay! So let's talk about your coming to Vancouver to talk about your book, The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. And so, obviously it's about connecting, but what's the summary of your discussion going to be about in Vancouver?
Well, I mean, first of all, we've been told, imbued in this idea that we're separate and we are separate things in competition for a limited amount of resource. That's pretty much the story of life as we know it. But that's not the story science is telling us anymore. I mean, what I've discovered, and I've been looking at frontier physics, frontier biology, psychology, anthropology, sociology, all of the sciences, is that between subatomic particles, between our bodies and our environment, between all the people we come in contact with, even strangers, between the people in any kind of societal cluster, there is a bond, a connection so profound that it's difficult to say where one thing ends and the next thing begins. And also, the other part of that is that nature has a drive for wholeness, and that although we think that nature is all about competition and, you know, survival of the fittest, nature is not driving for domination. Nature has designed us to be cooperative and to share, care, and be fair.
So, Lynn, why do you think that we as humans experience this duality? If nature wants us to be connected and whole, why do we separate ourselves?
Well, we do because we've been told, a lie. Basically, we're living a lie. We've been told one story that isn't true. since pretty much the scientific revolution in the 1700s, we were told that, you know, we exist as separate entities, and we operate in this very well-behaved universe of separate things. And we've also been told by Darwinian science that, you know, that we evolve through competition and we evolve through, you know, favorable mutation and the survival of the fittest. And that is actually a misreading of what goes on. And Darwin himself understood that. As time went on, he rejected the whole idea of survival of the fittest and noted cooperation in nature as the driving force. But, you know, it's been used to justify a lot of social movements since the Industrial Revolutions, the rise of capitalism, all of that. And so what it's ended up being is kind of the metaphor for our lives. And we think that's the way. And we've created our businesses and our educational model and our neighborhoods and all of that based on the idea of competition and thinking that that's central to survival. But the mess that we're in now, and, you know, we all know that we're in crises, that there are economic crises, there are ecological crises, there are political crises, there's crises on every front, and everybody's proclaiming that it's the end of this and it's the end of that, it's the end of capitalism as we know it, it's the end of oil, it's the end of food because it's the end of oil, it's even, some people are saying, the end of the world. But what it is we're finally seeing that it's the end of this false sense of who we are, because we no longer can live according to this false story. And by acknowledging and recognizing that, that's the path and the only path to a viable future.
So, Lynn, of course, people who listen to this show and people who are going to go to your event in Vancouver on April 29th at the Delta Airport Hotel in Richmond, obviously they're sold on this idea already, that we're all connected and we need to make changes. But how do we get this happening with the people who are still in that mentality of suck the oil out of the earth and kill as many animals as you can and make as much money as you can. You've got to get it now. How do we speak to those people who aren't listening to this show?
Well, the interesting stuff is that nature has designed us to be so connected that we're actually quite infectious. Our ideas, our emotions, you know, our general state of happiness or whatever, and our actions are very infectious. I mean, studies have demonstrated that, you know, we have a fundamental need to agree with each other. If I were talking to you, you would be in person. You would be actually mimicking and synchronizing with my voice. Your blinking, your arm movements, etc., would synchronize with my voice. And we also know that if I'm happy, for instance, those in my entire network are more likely to be happy. If I'm lonely, people in my network are more likely to be lonely. This is not because we self-select people just like us. It's because of the natural spread of our emotion down a network. Happy people naturally spread happiness. So if I'm happy, it's more likely that my friends, my friends' friends, my friends' friends' friends will be happy too. So this goes for happiness and loneliness, even obesity. But it also goes for pay-it-forward altruism. If I'm kind to you for no good reason, you're more likely to be kind to your friends, your friends' friends, your friends' friends' friends. And so it goes down the network. So what they've discovered is that, you know, one act of kindness, generosity, one act of change away from this selfish mentality has an enormous ripple effect. By the same token, we're so programmed to be fair and to abhor people who are not fair that they've found in game theory, and game theory has been invented by evolutionary biologists and economists, but you can use it to model just about any kind of human behavior and animal behavior. Well, they've looked at it in groups by playing a thing called the public works game. In this game, everybody is given $10, and they're all told you can put a certain amount into the pot and keep the rest for yourself. Now, initially, people are really generous. They put at least half, if not more, into the pot. And what happens in the pot is eventually, and everybody knows this, going to be redistributed out to everybody. So it's almost like putting money in to pay for the parks in California or something like that, something that everybody benefits from. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that there are usually a few freeloaders who don't put any money in. And then suddenly the whole thing starts falling apart. People feel really hard done by when some people don't put in money, and they do, even in this false situation. And then all of a sudden people stop putting any money in, and the whole thing falls apart. But what these economists have also observed is that all it takes is one or two instigators who are strong reciprocators, who really pay back more than everybody else, to change a whole cultural of selfishness and change the whole game around. And so I take this to mean that all we need are a few instigators doing, and it can be simple little acts to turn the whole game around.
That sounds exciting. So what are some of the things that you in your life do, like random acts of kindness?
Well, I mean, I'm experimenting with this now. I find that if somebody's very disagreeable, what happens if I'm very generous back and I say, okay, I ignore that slight to me, I ignore whatever he's doing to me, and let's say I do something completely out of the ordinary generous to this person and honor the relationship and the space between us rather than trying to be right. Or let's say my neighbor just got diagnosed with cancer and had a radical mastectomy. Mm-hmm. And so just saying, hey, I'll drive you. You know, you can't drive at the moment. Let me drive you someplace. Let me cook a meal for you. I'll just bring a meal over tonight. Just a random act of kindness. And you see what happens. And it changes the whole relationship. That relationship was a little standoffish, and it's not anymore. Try that particularly with somebody that you don't get along with and see what happens. And then see what happens around you, because they're so blown away by this completely random act of kindness, as you say, this instance of generosity, of honoring the space in between, that they go on and do it. Or I'm a lot more tolerant now of people with different points of view. I don't jump all over people who have a different opinion about something than I do. I don't have to be right with them. I just let us sit with our different opinions, and that's okay. We can connect on other ways. There's a wonderful example of that with the pro-life and pro-choice people. There was a case of this a few years back in Boston, where there were some killings in a Planned Parenthood. So the pro-life and pro-choice people got together and said, we have to do something about this. It's really escalating. So they decided to get together and meet in secret for a while. And they did. And at first they were very inflammatory in the way they spoke to each other. And then they realized that that wasn't doing any good. So they just decided to listen to the other, listen to why they chose the path that they had. And at the end, and then what ended up happening is the pro-life people would contact the pro-choice people whenever they heard that there might be a threat to their area, somebody threatening violence. And they started watching their backs for them. And the pro-choice people started doing some things for the pro-life people they might not ordinarily have done. So at the end of a couple of years, they held a press conference about this. And one of the press said to them, so who won the debate? And they said, well, no one really, because we feel more entrenched in our positions than we did before. By expressing them, we really know this is how we feel. And so the reporter said, so you lost, huh? You lost the debate. And they said, no. We now go out with each other. We party with each other. We look after each other's children. We love each other.
Wow.
And so they missed the point. The real point was the bond. They made the connection. They made the connection that the relationship was most important. And you could look at that as really a kind of model for what should go on in America, too. Republicans and Democrats are so busy being different and arguing among each other that everybody's losing sight of the bigger picture, the connection, and what ultimately benefits as a result. You know, that we're not Democrats and Republicans. We're all Americans, however we come to the table.
Beautifully said. That's an amazing story, especially, I mean, Democrats and Republicans have their tough opinions that they're really set in. But the pro-life and pro-choice, I mean, it is such an inflammatory debate. It's hard to imagine that those two groups could come together so lovingly and generously.
Well, I think the point is to try to recognize there's no one version of the truth,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when you step into the space between, as I say, you recognize and honor the relationship and you say to yourself, what do I have to be to make this person as good as they can be? You know, I am here to serve this relationship. What can I be to do that? When you take that position, you don't have a problem with difference. It's only when you insist on having people just like you, you know, anybody around me has to be another I, you know, just so I can prove that I'm right all the time. I will surround myself with people just like me,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the point is, we were programmed by nature to connect with everybody, whether they hold the same opinions about abortion or politics or whatever. There's another story I tell in my book about a batch of people in Israel, Palestinians and Israelis, and a guy called Mark Gerson works with them, and he works with a group that is composed of people from both camps. And they work very well together. And so one day he said to them, how could you work together so well? And they said, well, we are happy to live with paradox. And he said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, okay, as an example, let's have the Palestinians and the Israelis each write a paragraph of their version of the establishment of Israel. So the Palestinian writes his story, and his story basically says It's called The Disaster, and it writes all about how it was terrible. The Israelis came in, they displaced all these Palestinians from their homeland, and they were left without a place, and they've been left as refugees. Terrible. And then the Israeli wrote down, you know, the birth of independence, you know, and how brilliant it was this day that, you know, that Israel, sanctioned by the U.S., was allowed to take its historic place in its homeland, but that from the moment it has, it's been beleaguered at all from all sides by parties who would like to take this away from it. So, you know, the sadness and the reason for the enduring conflict is that both versions are true. Both versions mm-hmm. are true. And so when you learn to step into the bond, step into the space between, you learn to honor both sides of the relationship.
Hmm. That's so beautiful. Well, I'm going to sit with that for a minute because it is time for a break. We are speaking with Lynn McTaggart, and she is the author of The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us, which is coming out, is it tomorrow, April 19th? And she's also coming to Vancouver Friday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. She'll be at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel in Richmond. And you can get tickets through bellaspark.com. She's also doing a bit of a tour around the Pacific Northwest. So if you're listening online, she's going to be in Seattle on April 26th. Mount Vernon, Washington on April 27th, Bellingham on April 28th, and then here in Vancouver on April 29th and April 30th. So go to bellaspark.com if you want more information about that. And this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a flash.
What do you think the internet should be? Fast? Open? Reliable? A network that is diverse, free, and allows an equal exchange of ideas? This point of view is often challenged by monopolies in the media, as well as by decisions made on issues such as internet openness and usage-based billing. Without question, these decisions have an immense impact on consumers, socially and economically. Let's admit it, the internet has become an essential part of our lives. That's where we come in. OpenMedia.ca is here to ensure that the decisions regarding the internet are fair and citizen-friendly. OpenMedia.ca is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We advocate for a media communication system that adheres to the principles of access, choice, diversity, innovation, and openness. Our organization provides resources for volunteer organizers, collaboration tools, and leadership development. We engage, we educate, we empower. For more information, visit openmedia.ca, saveournet.ca, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. And our guest today is the lovely Lynn McTaggart. She is coming to Vancouver, and you can see her if you go to bellaspark.com. She'll be here Friday, April 29th and April 30th at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel. If you have a question for our guest, give us a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Lynn is the author of The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. Welcome back to the show, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we were just talking about that connection and the space between us and how both sides of each story can be true, and we don't have to hang on to so tightly to our opinion. We can just nurture the bond that we share, because all of us have differences, but we also have so many commonalities.
Well, and I think, too, the idea is it's okay not to have everything in common, because there's a deeper connection. And that's what much of my book is about, how nature has designed us so that we connect with others automatically. Even the people we find most disagreeable, there's a thing in our brains called mirror neurons. And what happens is when we see somebody do any kind of action or have any kind of emotion, the very same neurons in our brains fire as if we had the action, we had the emotion. So what happens is our brains are creating a merging all the time of somebody else's experience with our own. We also have, as I told you before, this need to be aware of each other. We need to agree with each other. We need to connect. We're constantly have a pull to belonging, to connection, to caring and sharing with each other, to being fair. So there is constant pull to wholeness, to connection with other people. And if we just surrender to that wholeness, rather than to being separate and being right and being individual all the time, we will connect more with others. It's a change of perspective. More than anything else, it's a change of perspective.
And so how do people who are struggling with changing their perspective, how do you suggest people do that?
Well, the first thing, I mean, there's a lot of practical advice when I write in the book. I talk about perception. I talk about changing our relationship and surrendering to wholeness. I talk about a new neighborhood where we're not trying to surround ourselves with a giant group of eyes, giant group of people who are the same. You know, we're stronger when we unite. We're weak when we compete. And one of the first things is just changing our perspective. A really interesting story occurred in 2004 with the tsunami. You know, with that tsunami, 25,000 people perished. But there were four native tribes that watched the whole thing from the top of a mountain, and they were completely unaffected. Everybody survived. How did they know about it? When they were asked later, they talked about, you know, this fish swam in a slightly different way, or the wind was slightly different, and there was a little bit of some rustling, and they just sort of said, this gave us the hint that the waves were going to pull back and come forward in fury. They watched the whole. They were attentive to detail. They were operating, in a sense, like a novice pilot does. You know, there's a big problem with airline pilots. When they put them on simulators, they'll throw in some flight details, superimpose it on the screen, and the pilots are so busy looking at that that they will end up crashing over an actual other airplane or some other impediment on the simulated ground. And that never happens to novices, because novices are watching with every pore of their body. Well, so are these native cultures. They're observing the whole. But we, who are so used to looking for individual things, never look like that. You know, there's a very great difference between the way certain people see things and other people, and it's very cultural. For instance, when we're looking at things, we always look for the individual thing, because we're trained to learn to be individuals from the day we're born. You know, when we're taught to read, for instance, those of us as old as me had books like Fun with Dick and Jane, where we were taught to watch what an individual person gets up to. And we're taught as young children to be individual, to compete at school, to stand out, to be excellent. And there's nothing wrong with being excellent, but the problem is we're so busy looking for individual things and being separate that we forget how to, you know, we make that primary, and we forget the connection as primary. Whereas, say in the East, you know, when children learn to read, they learn, you know, their primers say things like, you know, Big Brother is sitting with Little Brother. Little Brother loves Big Brother. Big Brother loves Little Brother. You know, it's all about connection and relationship, and that's what they learn. So they learn much more to see the whole. And these natives that were in the tsunami, you know, in Sri Lanka and the areas like that, they learn to see so holistically that they can swim underwater and distinguish things from, say, 14 feet away, the difference between a little brown clam and a little brown stone, without any things like goggles, no swimming aids. And they've learned how to train their eyes to see something different, see something very specific and holistic. And we can do that too. We can train and we can learn how to fly like a novice pilot. And it just takes certain techniques that I acknowledge in my and I enumerate in my book. To give you one example, there's a technique called mindfulness meditation that Eastern religions use. And it means just sitting and being present with all five senses and practicing that for a few moments. For instance, if you were, you know, if you were having your dinner, just stop and just listen to what it sounds like, listen to what it smells like, listen to what it, you know, really listen, really pay attention to what it tastes like and hear it and feel it. And try doing that in little five-minute spurts throughout your day. You very readily and very quickly, as studies have shown, learn to be much more observant of the whole.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that practice with us. It sounds really amazing. And how long does it take for people? Normally, you said it's very quickly. So how long do people typically start to notice results?
Just a few weeks of practicing it regularly. I mean, there have been studies on this, and they find people notice much more detail. They notice much more holism. And there's, you know, there are a number of other things that I talk about in The Bond, but that's just one of them. And there's also a number of practices to think about having and maintaining what I call aerial vision, which is that ability to entertain different point of views and not be bothered by it. You know, and that's more about a change of perspective. You know, we're so busy feeling like in order to live, we have to be right all the time. You know, but if you just sat and listened to another point of view and didn't try to argue with it, didn't try to convert the person to your side, because why should you need to? Suppose you just were able to live with those paradoxes, as the Israelis and Palestinians did, where you just shared your differing point of views without having to be right, without having to debate, without having to justify. You just said, okay, I'm brown-haired, you're blonde. You know, that's not a reason for a war. I believe in this, you believe in that, I'm Democrat, you're Republican. You know, we just have a different point of view. That doesn't mean we can't connect into the space in between, because that's where all connection lies. And if we can simply say, well, actually, I'm going to be whatever I have to be right now to help this person to be the best they can be, and I put myself at the service of this connection, that's a completely different perspective, because it says it's not me, it's us. And that's all about understanding that behind all these opinions, behind all of these beliefs, is a connection that always was there, that always was there.
Now, Lynn, there's something even more dramatic. There's a story that about the connection between a former member of the Hitler Youth Movement and the daughter of a Holocaust survivor were able to forgive each other and connect again. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, this is a wonderful story about the power of forgiveness and truth-telling and forgiveness. And this is a really great story. It was a very specific thing, but you can apply it in any part of your life when you're seeking to connect and forgive. And you find that this will work really well. It's all about the power of truth-telling. There is a good friend of mine, James O'Dea, who worked for Amnesty International. He ran the Washington Bureau, and he ran the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And now he works in peace and healing dialogues all around the world. And a number of these have been held between groups who are and people of opposing sides. And they deliberately put people like this together to let them dialogue and heal each other. And the only rules of the game are that they have to tell the deep truth. And they don't, you know, they say you can be contentious, you can ask probing questions, but you don't fight and you don't lie and you don't try to sugar it over. You tell the truth. So here were in this group the daughter of a Holocaust survivor, Mary Rothschild, and Gottfried Lieb, who was had been a member of the Hitler Youth Movement. So she's allowed to ask him anything she wants, and he is dreading this meeting because of all things to meet somebody, you know, who was a child of his hated enemies and victims. And he's feeling like he wishes the floor would swallow him up.
Mm-hmm.
So she turns to him and she says, okay, did you participate in anything against the Jews? And he said, well, I was part of the Hitler youth movement during Kristallnacht, which is the night of broken glass, where many Jewish stores and homes were destroyed and vandalized, and the first batch of Jews went to the concentration camps. He says, well, during that night, I beat up some Jews, I broke some and vandalized some places. But, he says, I was only 16. Well, that answer did not satisfy her. So she stepped a little further in this, and she says to him, okay, had you been 10 years older, would you have sent my relatives to the gas chambers? And at this point, Lieb is looking down at the floor. He doesn't know what to say about that, and he just sits there silently for a number of minutes, and finally he just says, you know, I just don't know. And for Mary, this almost provided a release that she didn't realize she wanted, because it was the power of deep truth. It was basically saying, and a whole other layer of truth, because she was basically saying to him, he was basically saying to her, you know, I could have been a Nazi. I could have been a Nazi. I could have sent people to die in the gas chambers. What an admission. And this unleashed something in her, the power of this deep truth. You know, many people who have written about forgiveness call it as problems of injustice and problems of hurt are like a knot between the victim and the perpetrator. You know, the victim feels like power has been taken away from him or her, and the perpetrator feels guilty in most cases for what he's done and has, and justice, where he's put to justice of some sort or punished, doesn't resolve that situation, doesn't untie the knot. So Mary is just blown away by this admission. And Gottfried then is just miserable when he has admitted, I could have been a mass murderer. And he's just nearly in tears, and he's saying, you know, I will always be associated with this. I was just a young man, but I am a Nazi. My children are Nazis. My grandchildren will be Nazis. I will always be associated with this. I am in the abyss.
Wow.
And Mary goes over to him at this point and takes his hand like he's the victim and says to him, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And it is just such an unbelievable moment. The power going on between them, the space between them, is just empowered with almost divine energy. When she is saying, you know, we're not Nazi and Jew anymore. We are connected. We are one. It's over. We're not the other. You're not the other anymore. And he is just overwhelmed. And he says, and this is his own words, you know, I was in the abyss, and she has thrown a bridge across it and invited me to meet her on it. And that was just one of the most powerful examples I've ever heard of the power of forgiveness to reestablish the connection. And it's all about that deep truth-telling, telling the truth about how you feel. I do this in workshops sometimes. I get people to say to the person next to them, take the thing that you're most ashamed of or that you were most hurt by and tell this person here, if they were the person who did this to you or to whom you did it, what would you want to say to them? And it is the most powerful thing. What you really wanted to say is the way, you know, is the way to establish that bond.
So, Lynn, it's interesting when we talk about forgiveness, creating that bond, because a lot of people, when they say forgiveness, you know, you should forgive people because it's just not worth it to carry that negativity around within you. So if you forgive, you're able to release it. And that is true. But what you're saying is that you can actually not only forgive so it's not on your back anymore, but you can actually create a real connection with the person that you were having difficulty with.
Absolutely. And, you know, pretending, we all spend a lot of time pretending this stuff doesn't matter and saying, well, I don't want to be hurt by it, so I won't think about it anymore and I'll slough it off. But the point is, the knot's still there. You've still been the victim or the perpetrator. The perpetrator has still been, you know, still carries that guilt, even if he spent 20 years in jail. You know, I mean, many, many, many prisoners say there isn't a moment I wouldn't take that instant back that I did that. You know, no matter how despicable the crime, you know, there's a lot of people who haven't touched base with that. But in most cases, people do connect with that shame of what they did, and there's no way to make it better. So if they can talk truthfully about their shame and their recognition of this limitation in themselves, this real problem in themselves, this, you know, this flaw, then they also are released. And the victims, no matter whether the person is put to jail for 20 years, that doesn't give them their property back, that doesn't give them their personhood back, or their, you know, their own power back. But this kind of truth-telling does, because you both go on an equal level. You've both been damaged by this act, and you both get to reestablish the balance in the relationship, and the bond comes back. That bond that's there, that connection with everyone is still there.
Beautiful.
And it gets reaffirmed.
Mm. Well, it's time for another break, so we'll be back in a moment. We are speaking with Lynn McTaggart today, and she is going to be in Vancouver on Friday, April 29th, and Saturday, April 30th, at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel. This is a Bella Spark and Science to Sage production. If you want tickets, you can go to bellaspark.com, or you can also grab tickets at Banyan Books. Again, that is Friday, April 29th, at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel in Richmond. And if you want to get on the air and ask Lynn a question, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back in a moment.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Do you have a child in grades 3, 4, or 5? The Gecko Project is a fun and easy study being conducted by researchers from UBC. We'll drive our mobile lab to your house so there's no hassle, and your child will get to play some fun and exciting games with our research assistants while you answer some questions about home life. You and your child will both receive a $25 gift certificate from a local business for your time. Come be a part of Gecko Project today.
To participate or learn more, call 604-827-3426.
Well, welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Happy Monday. It's a beautiful sunny day in Vancouver. We had snow late last week, which was kind of weird, slushy snow, if you noticed it. And now it's fabulous and beautiful out, so hooray for that. We are speaking today with Lynn McTaggart, and she is coming to Vancouver to do a workshop on Friday, April 29th and Saturday, April 30th. She'll be at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel in Richmond. And if you want tickets, you can go to bellaspark.com. That's BellaSpark.com, bellaspark.com. Or you can go to Banyan Books and grab some tickets there. Again, Friday, April 29th and Saturday, April 30th. In Richmond at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel. Welcome back to the show, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And it's such a pleasure speaking with you, because just as you're speaking, I'm feeling all like warm and inspired. And so I love hearing you speak. And I know that your workshop is going to be really exciting. What kind of things you mentioned, the forgiveness exercise, what are some of the other things that you're going to be working on with participants?
Well, I'm going to be working on, first of all, on Friday night is a talk at Vancouver, and Saturday is the all-day workshop. So Friday night is really a taster about the book and a little bit of experiential, but Saturday is all-day experiential stuff, learning how to recover the bond in your life. So I'm going to get people involved in all kinds of exercises showing how to recover the bond, how to perceive holistically. So not just things like mindfulness meditation that I talk to, but also all kinds of practices you can do every day that will help you begin to see the whole, see other points of view, and be much more sympathetic to them. There'll be a lot of role play that we'll be doing with that, that you can take out into your life. And I'll be giving a lot of assignments out where people will have to go out and do things after our Saturday. We'll be looking at ways to change your perspective on relationships and how to do that. And some of the, again, practices that you can do to shift your perspective, to make it so it's not about me, it's about us. And also little practices that help you become more compassionate toward everybody, all kinds of meditative effects, et cetera, that enable you to become, you know, kinder and more open and more bond-like with everyone. And then we're going to look at also reestablishing closeness and connection and a tight-knit community, whether it's your community at work, your neighborhood, your community of friends, and how that works, and the power of what they call superordinate goals, which are goals that you can only achieve by the collective effort of the entire team. You'll see through a lot of my research that when people fire together, when they work together like that, it's almost like building a barn. They wire together. They actually get on the same wavelength. Their brain waves start operating in sync. There was a study of jazz players demonstrating that when they all played, when they began playing the same notes, their brain waves went in sync. So when we do something together with a collective purpose, we all start getting closer. And I see this all the time in our workshops. I'm going to create small intention groups, too. You know, I've been always interested in the power of intention, and show how sending intention to a member of the group affects and heals and improves everybody, the senders as well as the sendees, then the recipients. And we're also going to work on, collective efforts and how teamwork and watching and observing how teamwork actually connects us with the client, with what we're supposed to be, connects us with the source. And I'm also going to work on ways that you can bring this into your life in small acts and how you can be an instigator and an agent for change. Without, you know, we all think that a change agent has to be somebody devoted to this all the time. You can go about your ordinary life and make unbelievable transformations at work, at home, in your neighborhood, in your town.
Mm. Oh, I'm so excited. It sounds like it's going to be a really good workshop. And I'm looking also at the website, bellaspark.com. And so you have some evenings in Seattle, Mount Vernon, Bellingham. So those are going to be the evening talks. And then if people are interested, they'll have to drive up to Vancouver for the all-day workshop.
Yes, I mean they can. I believe they're at the same place, but people who are at the Seattle or the Bellingham events or whatever can still come to the Saturday workshop. Or if they happen to not be able to come to one of the evening events and still want to, they can come to any of the events that we're running all week in the Pacific Northwest.
Wonderful. Okay, so again, the website is bellaspark.com, and you also have a website, thebond.net.
We have a website that will be available in a couple of hours.
Woo-hoo.
So for people who want to join our community and be part of our programs with The Bond and connect with other people who are interested in being agents for change, too, and learning the power of how we are powerful when we unite, we're weak when we compete, they can come to thebond.net, www.thebond.net. And the book is available. The Bond is now available, I am told.
Yay. And so the best place is like any bookstore or Amazon?
Any bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores.
Wonderful. Okay, well, we're going to be wrapping up the show in a few minutes because Parts Unknown is starting at 1 o'clock. So today's guest is Lynn McTaggart. Again, she is coming to Vancouver on April 29th for an evening lecture. And then all day Saturday, April 30th, she's going to be doing a fabulous workshop. It sounds like it's going to be really inspiring and uplifting, and that's always wonderful, wonderful way to spend your weekend if you're able to make it. And again, that's going to be at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel in Richmond. You can pick up tickets at Banyan Books or through Science to Sage or bellaspark.com. And Lynn, is there anything that you would like to add before we close the show?
Well, I want to add that what we're really talking about here is not any drastic change. What we're talking about here is things that we all can do and how we can become instigators. You know, that it doesn't, changing the culture of selfishness we now live in, changing the crises that we have, begins not with the president or with congressmen. It begins with you and me. It begins here and now. It begins with small acts that we all find, resonate with us on some very, very deep level, and that we have to do this. We now live at a point where we are the most unfair in history, where places like America, with more billionaires than anywhere else in the world, also has 39 million people below the poverty line. I'm not talking about across-the-board socialism. What I'm talking about is a deep and uncomfortable sense of unfairness that we all carry. And when this happens, everybody loses, rich and poor. And we are now at the bottom of all sorts of social indicators, from health to crime to education. We're at terrible crisis here in America. But by stepping into this space between, by connecting on this deeper level, by understanding that we were always meant to connect, we were never meant to compete, we were never meant to be isolated as individuals, we can turn the whole game around. We can turn America around, we can turn the world around, but it starts with the understanding and the commitment that it doesn't have to be like this. It never was meant to be like this, and it doesn't have to be like this for one more day.
Yay. I love that. Thank you so much, Lynn, for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure. You've been such a wonderful guest, and I'm super excited about your workshop, and I'm really excited for the changes that people are going to feel when they go, because I can just feel your energy is so uplifting. And so, hooray, thanks for coming to Vancouver.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to getting there.
Thank you. Well, have a great day, or I guess it's evening where you are.
Thanks so much.
Take care, Lynn. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Again, so that was Lynn McTaggart. She is coming to Vancouver Friday, April 29th and Saturday, April 30th. She'll be at the Delta Vancouver Airport Hotel in Richmond. You can go to bellaspark.com. She's also author of The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us, and that is now available. You can go to thebond.net. So again, thank you to Lynn McTaggart for being with us. And thank you so much for listening. It's been such a pleasure hosting this hour. I'm really loving the Monday time slot, so I hope you're enjoying it too. And of course, you can always listen online at citr.ca to our podcasts if you missed the live broadcast. And I want to send some love out to you on this beautiful sunny Monday. I hope that you have a fabulous week, and I am going to close the show before Parts Unknown comes up in just a few minutes. I'm going to close the show with a song that I just love, 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 by Ziggy Marley, Love Is My Religion. Here he is on Synchronicity.
Yeah.
Love is my religion. To find out what this life is worth, through the books and Bibles of time, I've made up my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. This is a calling, have you heard? Lovers to the fore, 'cause no one is gonna lose their soul. So don't let nobody stop us. Free spirits have to soar. With you I share the gift, the gift that we now know. Searching now, I found out what this life is worth. Yeah. Not in the books did I find, but by searching my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. That we now know. Oh.
done.